Hello, this is Stephen Lucky, and I'm in London. And in my presence, I have the black playwright Dipo Agbeluje, who burst onto the scene in 2003 with his wonderful play at the Oval House, The Early Morning. And he did an adaptation of Mother Courage and Her Children for Nottingham Playhouse and Eclipse Theatre. Hello, Dipo.
Hello. Hi, Stephen.
Now, how are you?
I am fine, thank you. I'm fine.
A lot's been happening in the last year, and I'm here to talk to you about it. I don't know if we're going to have enough time, but let's start with, you won the Alfred Fagan Award in 2009. What did that mean to you?
Well, it meant that my bank account had gone up by £5,000. So that was nice. It's always good when a writer gets can make more money out of a work that he's already been paid for, knowing how comparatively small the commissions for theatre are. So it was great to be recognised by my peers. It was also great to be at the award ceremony, to be around so many friends, meet up again with the cast, with Femi Olufowoju Jr., the director, and with all my friends at Soho Theatre. And it was great because it's part two of what I'm hoping will be a three-part investigation of Nigeria as seen through a family, the Adeyemi family.
Okay, well, we may come to that a little later, but let's just talk about the award. What is the Alfred Fagan Award?
Well, it's a prize that is given to a play in any given year written by a writer of Caribbean or African descent. And a few years ago, it was mainly for writers of Caribbean descent, but it has been enlarged to writers of to include writers of African descent as well.
And do you think that's a good thing, or do you think it's the right thing?
Well, I think anything that rewards a writer is fine. Anything that gives a writer recognition, I think, is great.
Did this have an impact on your career?
Well, it's a bit early to tell because the award came in I think in October, so it's a bit early to tell, but I'm sure it definitely will do something for my career. Definitely, I think it's a prestigious award, so it's something that I think maybe down the line, you know, it will pay off some kind of dividend for me.
Okay, well, you also got nominated at the Writers Guild for Best Children's Play for, I think the play was called For Knock Against My Heart.
Yes, Knock Against My Heart, which was done, it was actually a very unique young people's play because it was done with the Theatre Centre, an organisation whom I've already collaborated with in the past. And it was also in collaboration with a Brazilian company called Nós do Moro, a Rio-based theatre company, and we had two actors from Brazil come over and take part in the show, and it toured to schools all around the country. That was quite a fantastic experience, having two different cultures coming together.
Can you just briefly tell us a little bit about the play?
Well, it's about it's set in Brazil, mm-hmm. and it's an adaptation of The Tempest.
Okay,
and it's about underlying it is a love story between the Miranda character and the Caliban character, mm-hmm. and it's set against the backdrop of a contest for water, over water in a farming area. So rather than being sort of a wizard, Prospero actually is a landowner, okay. who is trying to irrigate the water to dam the river,
okay.
Around a hill and take it away from the peasants who own the land. So it's that contest between them, and then of course there's a struggle over Miranda, his daughter.
So why was it? Why did you call it "Knock" for a knock against my heart?
It's called "Knock Against My Heart" because it's sort of it's taken out of a speech Miranda gives in the play, sort of I can't remember what it's called. The winds did knock against my very heart. It was when she saw the ships that were coming from Italy drown. When they were smashed, and she was giving her reaction to the ship that was carrying Ferdinand and the Duke and all that crashed on their island. So okay.
I can tell you're really excited, or you know, you, or you were really excited about that particular piece. You must have been disappointed when, unfortunately, you didn't win the award.
Well, I think you're always disappointed if you don't win. I mean, you only need to look at Oscar night and see the faces of those who don't win to see them gritting their teeth and clapping as if, you know, they were swatting at mosquitoes, to know that nobody likes losing. But I did lose to a colleague of mine, Brendan Murray, who does a lot of good work in writing for young children. I think it's a very, very underrated area.
What about Carl writing. Miller? Wasn't Carl Miller...
And Carl Miller, I was going to mention that too, because Carl Miller, again, another colleague and friend of mine, we were all in the running for that award. We were the three nominees for that award. So in a way, it's because we all know each other because we work in that circuit of writing for young people.
Yeah.
So in a way, you know, I was disappointed not winning, but I thought it was great that somebody that I knew... ...so long working in that field... And for me, it was just good that writing for young people gained that recognition. I think it's vastly underrated.
Right, let's move on. So I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I got an email from you. And you said, Stephen, take a look at this. And it centres around that amazing article that was written in the Evening Standard by Lindsay Johns, where he claims that black theatre is blighted by its ghetto mentality. There's been a lot of comment from the black community, black theatre community, about this particular article. Have you got anything to say about this?
Well, first and foremost, I think it was good to have an article like that raise those issues. I think judging by the responses, it shows that it's touched something that has been an ongoing dialogue amongst black theatre practitioners in Britain. So I think for that alone, it's really achieved something quite substantial.
I mean, I'm not actually saying that I agree or disagree, but I just think I agree with you in terms of actual generating a debate. Wow, what a debate it's generating. And that's positive in a way.
Well, it's positive that anything that raises the profile of black theatre in the mainstream is positive. As I said, it's just like winning an award or being nominated for an award. No matter what you may think of the play, you know, you know, the fact that, you know, you're in there, you know. So I think on that level, it's done that. Yes, sir.
It does say, with the exception of Kwame and one or two other playwrights, on closer inspection, black British theatre is languishing intellectually. It's incoherent street babble and plots which revolve around cliché staple of hoodies, guns and drugs. Oh, that's pretty tough stuff, isn't it?
Yes, I think, but there's something I think I need to go a bit further back, because the whole, I think, essay was started as... It was to talk about the opening of Bolaak Bajie's play Off the Ends,
yeah.
And I think if I have a problem with the essay, I think it's that it's picking up on a play that hadn't yet opened, and sort of making some judgments on it, which I would disagree with, because I think as an academic I wouldn't start to I don't I only try to deal with if the facts. And although Lindsay Johns does make some very valid arguments, I think the starting premise of using it to judge a play that he hadn't yet seen,
okay.
I think I found that being quite on shaky ground. But I think, yes, going to the content of the piece, that yes, there are things that were raised. But I would also, another point of worry for me is that... as artists, we judge plays by their content,
okay.
And by the theme. So you can set a play, yes. I think there are a lot of black plays that are set in those sort of areas, in urban areas, in council estates, deal with things like guns and drugs and all. But I think you also have to look at the themes of those plays, because the setting is only one aspect of a play. The true content of a play is the theme, and what does it address? Is it father-son relationships? Are there themes about love? Are there themes which are universal, which all and everybody can connect to? If you look at mainstream culture, for instance, some of the most popular programs on TV, gangster films, gangsters, crime. You know, we talk about shows like The Wire, but even look at the more popular mainstream shows like CSI and all these other shows. Look at in literature, the crime novel. I mean, these it's in general population, it's not something that is just exclusive to a black community alone. That's number one. And number two, I think that if we look at how society in this country, it's very much a class-based society in which certain voices are never heard. And I think it's a tribute to a lot of black writers for being able to give the black underclass a voice in Britain. We may or we may not agree with some of the themes, but the mere fact that this is an underclass that has not been given much visibility except in the press, particularly on programs like Crime Watch, I think it's nice to see writers trying to get under the skin to understand why we're coming from. Another thing for me when I see a lot of those plays is that you see writers trying to engage and understand why the younger generation is so angry, why they've taken a different path. Because if you look at the work of the earlier generations, it was about immigrant status, the relationship between home. Writers like Michael Abbensett, like Mustapha Matura, it was the relationship between the Caribbean and Britain. Things have changed. What second, third generation of children growing up in the world, some of them who owe very little or no allegiance to any other place except Britain, and are trying to struggle and find their way in society in today's. What does it mean to be black and British in Britain today? And I think a lot of the writers who've tried to engage with that story have they've I think they've worked very hard, and they haven't, I don't think they have tried to just buy into some stereotype. I think they've gone under the skin, and a lot of the work that I've seen, they've gone under the skin to try and address those issues.
You're a black playwright and a well-known black playwright. Where do you see yourself in terms of the stuff that you put out and what you're writing about and the themes that you want to talk about?
It depends on what catches my fancy, really. I'm very much an ideas person. I like starting with an idea, a sort of what if. So, like Early Morning, for instance, was what if three black cleaners in London decide to stage a coup and overthrow the Prime Minister? Because that's what, if they were in Nigeria, that's what you do back in the day. It was like, you got fed up with the government, some soldiers, they just, start shooting and announce on the radio that, hey, I'm in charge now, So, and it's so I normally start from ideas on the what if. And I think for me, that's always what's been interesting. It's that idea of ideas and how they relate to people on the ground. So in it, I, to be honest, I, how would I position myself? I don't know. I think that's left for other people to see my work and say, this is where we think you are. And you can have 100 people give 100 different answers as to where I would fit in that perspective. But for me, I enjoy working with ideas. It's ideas that grab me. And I think they will continue to do so. I think we live in such a complex world. But also, I think I must say that my experience on working with The Hounding of David Oluwole has also given me an appetite for trying to uncover hidden stories
Okay.
of black people in Britain, which I found that quite an experience. And that's something that I think, moving beyond the realm of ideas, that I would like to continue to explore.
Okay. Right, well, let's just move on now. In response, I sent you an article that was written by Lynn Gardner. And in it, she says, "Why is British theatre still enthralled to Oxbridge, with graduates of elite universities occupying so many top spots? Theatre in this country has always had a problem with diversity, and it's in danger of getting worse." You're an academic. You've got loads of qualifications. You even teach. What do you think about that one?
Well, I think it's the truth of any society that those from the elite classes are normally in charge. And particularly in a country like Britain, where we never really had a revolution. So there was not very much off with their heads of the French Revolution type in Britain.
Yeah, but the argument is, if I'm looking at that article now, if you look at the people that run the theatres, we're talking about Nick Kent, Nicholas Heitner, Tom Morris, Dominic Drumgoole, who I know, okay, Rupert Gould, yeah. They all run theatres in the UK. They all went to Oxbridge. Where are the other individuals? Where are the black practitioners?
Well, we're here. I mean, you're looking at one, and I'm looking at one as well. So, but I mean, seriously, yes, it is a serious thing. But I think that representation reflects society. It's very difficult for you coming from a poorer background to be able to sustain yourself in an industry where, at the very beginning, the financial rewards are very, very small.
But then isn't there an imbalance then?
No, that's what I'm saying, because it also represents there's an imbalance in society as well. If you look at how many children from state schools, the ratio of those from state schools and those from independent schools that go on to Oxford and Cambridge, there's an imbalance. There's an imbalance all the way. It's almost like right from birth that the, and it's a that there is this imbalance.
But also, Lynn, what Lynn is also saying with the with the credit crunch and the crisis with finance and money drying up for funding, this situation is going to get worse.
Well, yes, but it also means that we also have to stand up together as a community in theatre and do something about it. I don't remember if you were there, but remember at the Young Vic a few years back where Equity had this big brouhaha against the Arts Council.
Okay.
About the closing down of certain theatres,
yes,
and withdrawal of funding,
yeah,
and the way,
yeah,
the funding system worked to the detriment of certain theatres and not giving them enough time to,
yeah,
reapply and fight back for their funding.
And a lot of theatres lost their ring-fenced money.
Yes.
Yeah.
And but what I saw there was the way, it was how people came together to say no. I know we are in a credit crunch and people are talking about us needing to make cuts and all these sort of things, but what people do not we must always remember as artists is that we must never sell ourselves short. Now, this is outside of the sort of class debate we're talking about, but us collectively as artists must never sell ourselves short. When you're asked, what do you do? And you're like, well, I'm just an artist. I'm just a writer. You're not just a writer. You're not just an actor. You may feel that your job is not the same, you might want to have this sort of sense of false modesty in terms of, well, I'm not a teacher, I'm not somebody who is very useful in society. That is not true. I should think we should leave that to others to belittle the work that we do. When you think in monetary terms how much the arts contributes to Britain, you know, every year, it is phenomenal. For the little amount of money that we earn, for how little taxpayers contribute to the arts. We, in terms of just monetary level, we contribute phenomenal.
And I think
society.
You're absolutely right, and I agree with you. So therefore, shouldn't there be an argument that we must protect, one, the arts, but also diversity?
That's a given, because as you said, in terms, if the funding is cut, the thing with funding is, if it's cut, whether it's in the arts or in health or in any sector, it's the least disadvantaged who can afford it. I remember very much in the mid-90s where there seemed to be this total demonization of single mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Without us knowing her background, just seeing a woman with a pram, bam, oh, she's a single mother. And this sort of demonization, and their funding should be cut, their money should be taken away from them. And it was interesting to see that it was people who were from the same background who felt the same way. I feel that for us in the arts, the idea of diversity is something that we, if we start doing like the way of the BBC capitulating and chopping stations like BBC Six and the smaller stations.
But it's happening all around.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. If we do that, and we allow that to continue,
mm-hmm,
we are going to get it in the neck first. Okay. It will be all the diverse programs, okay. the programs that are about equal opportunities. Okay.
And I just want to stop you there. I do want to stop you there just for the moment, because actually, you know, this, the present government, for the last, how long have they been in power? 13 years. They've pushed the agenda diversity. We know now, who, no matter who gets in, the axe will fall, and they will have to wield an axe on public finances. You have passionately talked about protecting diversity because it's something that is really important for our society. The problem is that the whole conversation of diversity has just vanished. It looks as if, like, money is far more important, and actually, let's just forget about diversity. The Olympics was won on pitching diversity in London.
Yeah. And that's the rub. If and from what's happening now, even with the Olympics, you can see that most of the cultural Olympiad is being sidelined. So money has been taken away from the arts towards the Olympics. The cultural Olympiad, which some of that money was supposed to be diverted for, has now been pushed to one side. It's interesting because it's sadly what's happened is that we've got this debate of where it's culture and money.
How do you protect diversity?
I don't know, to be honest. What I think we should do to protect it is to continue doing the work that we have done. I remember...
But to do that, you have to support it financially.
We have to, but I think it also boils down to some of the essays, some of the stuff we've been discussing in the past. But one way we mustn't go down, I think, is the American system, where we have to rely, go cap in hand, to the funding bodies, to private sponsors. That, I think, because I know Thatcher tried that, and that was a disaster. I do not believe, and I believe that a lot of the best economists in the world would tell you that the trickle-down theory is not a theory, it's a myth. It's a myth. And also what it is a new kind of slavery. It's a new kind of slavery where you are, well, I wouldn't say slavery, but it's a new kind of serfdom where you owe, rather than going to one central body, i.e. the government, you have to go around to all these different other interests. Now, if we look at it from the point of view of diversity, for instance, how many people of diverse backgrounds, and I mean in terms of disability, gender, as well as race, mm-hmm. are on boards of some of these big organizations? How many? They're not that many. And in a way, most people on those boards actually mirror what Lynn Gardner was talking about in terms of those who are in the higher positions in theater in the country. So what it would mean is that we would have this kind of almost a return to a sort of a monoculture, where it is only, because if you are on a board and the government has tightened its regulations, let's say for instance, so you don't need, it won't judge you in terms of diversity, you will not give money to something that you do not want, or you do not like, or you do not understand, or you don't care to understand. You'll give it to something that you want to see. If you want to continue seeing Shakespeare, if you want to continue seeing plays about the white middle class in Hampstead, that's where you will put your money to. And you'll end up being beholden to those institutions for your very survival. And this is why, in a way, if you allow us to become a society that is more and more oriented towards money only, these are the kind of consequences that you're left with. And what would happen is you will have a kind of theatre that is even more mono than it is. And instead, you'll have only these sops of things like colorblind casting to make up, you know. Because what would have happened is that there'd be no more ghetto plays for black actors to perform. And so you'd end up with, our best black actors as always playing the white characters in colorblind shows.
I'm going to move you on. Thank you very much for that contribution. And fascinating what you had to say. Now, it doesn't get any better than this. Olivier Award nominations. Your play of The First Wife, but you call it
Yaile,
has been nominated for Outstanding Achievement in an Affiliate Theatre. You must be over the moon. That is absolutely fantastic. Can you just tell me a little bit about the the nomination and going for the lunch and looking forward to the ceremony. Well, and how you feel about the whole thing?
Yeah. Well, it was. I was told at a board meeting at Soho Theatre that I'd been nominated, and they actually thought that Tiata Fohodzi, the co-producers, had already told me. So I was looking, like it was like sort of like, congratulations on your nomination. And I'm like, what nomination? And they're like, oh, you haven't been told. So then they mentioned, and they were all laughing because they said the look on my face was like, what the heck is this all about? Yes, it was. It was a huge surprise, I would say. And yeah, it was nice. It was nice to be nominated, particularly for that play, particularly being with Theatre Fohodzi and with
let's talk about that, the relationship that because there is a lovely relationship between the three of you. How long has this been going on? It's not just happened last year. There's a little bit of history, isn't there?
That's right, because it started with the estate in 2006, and that again was a collaboration between Soho Theatre and Tiata Fohodzi, and that. We had a great time, you know, doing that. And Femi came to me and suggested that rather than write a new play for Tiata Fohodzi, why don't I just continue telling the story of the characters in the estate? And
he got it right, didn't he?
Yes, he did, because I didn't want to. I was like, I've been there, done that. You know, I don't want to go back to that for. But he kept saying that, look, there is so much for us to mine with that family, and it seems that, you know, that we're onto something, and if we stopped, it would be like unfinished business. So I went back and I thought, well, it's all well and good, but I still need a story. You know, if I don't have a story, it's pointless. And I had always wanted to do a play set in the 1980s when I was still living in Nigeria and I was in university, and I always wanted to do a play in which I could bring in all these kind of Nigerian references so that people who were there at that time would, you know, would remember them. And I thought, okay, I found a story. Now I can get cracking. And it was the fastest draft I've ever written.
Oh, my God. But when you write really fast. How fast was this? I hope you didn't just write it overnight. I know what you're like. You're prolific when it comes to writing.
Yeah. Well, I wish it were so, but it was... No, it was great. I wrote it very, very quickly. Before I knew it, we were on stage. We had this fantastic cast, I have to say. I'd always wanted to work with Judah Kudike.
Okay.
I'd always wanted to
he's
work
great,
with him.
He's a great guy, yes. Actually. A really, really he's, nice person. Not just a very good actor, but genuinely a lovely person.
Yes, but I have to say, you know, and we got him, and that was amazing. But, you know, even these young talents that we had, like Babatunde Aleshi and Toby Bakari. And Toby Bakari is actually a graduate of Identity Drama School, which is the only black drama school in Britain. So I think it's actually quite a tribute to them and to Femi Ogun, because he was an amazing talent. And the way he's been nurtured by them, I thought was, you know...
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've actually used the agency myself and used a couple of the actors and there. He's done a terrific job. But carry on. Talk about the relationship between you and Femi and the Soho Theatre.
Yes. And so we did it again. So it was almost like, you know, it's just a continuation of the whole program. And, you know, it was the same people, because it's the same people at Soho who are still around, you know.
But you've all come to an interesting place. This is fantastic. One, I hope you win this award, but being nominated is the icing on the cake. That's absolutely fantastic. But, you know, where do you go from here as a writer? Also, Femi, I understand, is going to be leaving as artistic director. Have different avenues opened up because of this? Or have you just got to a point where you... I don't know, you tell me.
I don't know either, actually. I think Femi's leaving Tiata Fohodzi in a very strong position. Again, it's one of those. It's one of those. The recent Theatre for Odyssey is a company that actually it shows you the reason why diversity is such an important aspect of society today, and it's not just something that should be a tick box thing. It shows you that excellence can come from, you know, from anywhere, if it's given the right amount of funding, if it's, you know, and it's allowed for its autonomy. It's brilliant. I mean, it's you go into the office and it's only Femi and Thomas Kell, the administrator.
Mm.
And yet what the company has been able to achieve, you know, along with its board is tremendous.
He's done a brilliant job in the last 10 years. I'm yet to interview him. I can't pin him down. It's not because I don't want to, and I know he does too. Can't pin him down because he's just so busy. But Femi, if you're listening, I'm coming to get you. Now, what about you? What about you? What happens to you? Because you've, one, had a phenomenal year, okay? There's this Olivier Award looming. What's your next step?
It's to do a lot to continue working. I want to continue writing. I think that's the thing. The nomination, what it does is that it gives you more visibility, opens a few more doors for you. And I love writing. That's all I've ever wanted to do. And it's what I wanted to do for stage, for film. I am working on a film project at the moment, working on quite a number of film projects as well.
Is that something that you would like to do, move away from theatre into film?
No. I would like to combine both. I think there are a lot of...
And what about television? I know you have a huge passion for television. I think it was you who got me on board for HBO, and now it's all I watch.
Yes, I would love to. I'd love to write for... But some of the experiences that I've had with writing for... or trying to write for TV has sort of... brought me, it given me a sort of a greater appreciation of some of the comments that have been made by people like Paul Abbott and Tony Jordan in terms of writing for TV. In the sort of meetings that I've had, I just find that sometimes writing for British TV, there's not the kind of ambition that you see in terms of writing for the American TV. And the two experiences that I've had where I've not even been able to get past, you know, sort of a commissioning stage, that just some of the comments and things that I heard, you know, the comments and the feedback sort of depressed me. Mm. Because I, if you look on TV, for instance, in terms of what's diversity in terms of TV, and it isn't that much. I think in theatre's done a better job than TV.
I still think that theatre could go further, but...
No, I'm saying that in terms, just comparatively, theatre has done a better job than TV, if you compare the two. And coming up against, you know, my experience, I think there are just too many stumbling blocks, and, you know, and it's almost like the first hurdle when you present the idea, and it's the idea that they start to chip and whittle at. And then you have people who actually assume that they know what it is to write about black characters, what black characters would and wouldn't do, you know, it's unbelievable, I have to say. So writing for TV at the moment is something that I'm not too interested in doing. Film, I think there's much more freedom, artistic freedom, particularly in Britain. Mm. It's not like commercial film like in Hollywood or in Nigerian film in Hollywood, where there are certain, you know, themes and certain subjects and how they are handled, and genres which you have to sort of tie yourself into. So at the moment I'm doing film, I'm doing a film adaptation of The Estate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing an adaptation of a short film that I'm working on called Area Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to work on another project very soon in set around the film industry in Nigeria as well.
Okay. Well, good luck with your movie career. I can't wait to see your first movie. I will be there. And thank you very much for talking to us on Theatre Voice.
Thank you.